Happy Tuesday, April 18th on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. New episodes pop every Tuesday and Thursday on JoeBucksFan.com. And within an hour or so later, you're going to get the podcast on iTunes, Podbean.com, and various podcasting platforms. We appreciate the massive growth of the podcast. And even more so, we appreciate Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud presenters of all of Ira Kaufman's work, his Monday, Wednesday, and Friday columns on JoeBucksFan.com, and these fantastic podcasts. Ira, everyone wants more. More time, more savings, more benefits. You'll always get more at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Lease a 2017 CTS for just $449 a month with zero down, and enjoy the many benefits of being an Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa client, like complimentary digital alignment checks, car washes, courtesy transportation, and so much more. Click EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and, of course, see the dealer for all the details, every last detail on the offers. You can visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com to get started. That's the way you want to go, Ira. And, of course, we cannot forget our friends at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, they believe customers deserve more, like more selection. Shop hundreds of brand new Cadillacs. New 2017 ATS sedans are just $319 a month. Morse has more. Hurry into Brandon's only luxury dealership. That's right, Ira, Brandon's only luxury dealership. Or click EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, and we'll talk more about them later. Ira, your first personal appearance in a while is coming up at Sports Legends Bar and Grill. That's the commish's draft party Thursday night, April 27th. And the party's going to get started early, but you know what? I think the core of people are going to start getting there about 7 o'clock, 7:30. And Ira Kaufman is going to be there. You can press the flesh with Ira. Sports Legends Bar and Grill. That's the Bucks Uncensored podcast draft party. Ira's going to be there really all night. I'll be there as well. I'm Steve Isbitz from JoeBucksFan.com. That's the corner of Drew Street and U.S. Highway 19 in Clearwater. Big fun place. Very pleased to say that the commish invited us out there. He's going to take good care of us. And it's going to be a blast. I mean, the draft party, wow. All right, Ira, here we sit within the hallowed walls of One Buck Palace, and we're recording this after the parade of Jason Light, Jameis Winston, Gerald McCoy, sharing all their stuff with us. The season is back. Ira Irv Kaufman is back for his 97th year covering the NFL.
What a turnout today, too, at One Buck.
Big media turnout.
What else is there to cover?
Exactly.
What, a dumb soccer minor league team
in
Orlando?
The Syracuse Cruncher in the playoffs over there, really.
So, Ira, look, there's so much to talk about, and we've got two podcasts this week. Let me get first.
I'm going to give you my overall takeaway over here.
Overall overview.
All right, the soul bearing of Gerald McCoy and the bubbling effervescence, starting right off, of Winston. Winston's like a little kid. He can't, you know, it's Christmas morning.
You took the words out of my mouth. He was over the top.
Yeah. Over the top. And it's something that we've consistently seen from Jameis Winston. We're not surprised. He is one of those guys that would play basically for nothing.
I think
that's true. Meanwhile, Gerald McCoy's coming in like he's you know, the eighth defensive tackle on the roster, saying he's not doing enough in the fourth quarter. And all right, I'll start the podcast off in fine manner. Gerald, you're right. You're not doing enough in the fourth quarter. So we can start with right there.
Isbitz, you always
love to argue, Isbitz.
No, you might as well bring it. I'm not arguing at all.
Can
McCoy be better, more dominant player? Absolutely. Nobody looks at Gerald McCoy on the field and says, man, he's getting every ounce he can out of his potential. No. So what McCoy said, and for those who weren't there, obviously most people don't care enough to spend their whole day watching Bucks press conferences. I'm Steve Isbitz, here with Lee DeKemper, of course, the magic of JoeBucksFan.com. McCoy gets up there and tells everybody, well, I went to the Pro Bowl, and a few guys I really trust at the Pro Bowl in Orlando essentially told me I ain't doing enough, I'm not good enough, and I'm a problem with this team because I'm not taking it where it needs to go. And he took it to heart, and he believes him, and he was somber. What is going on here?
You hope that the three people, Lee, are not Sal Palantonio, Adam Schefter, and Ed Werder. I mean, look, what I think happened is, you know, like most players, they go over the film. And they look at themselves on film. And Gerald McCoy, you know, didn't make many key plays, especially the Dallas and New Orleans games. That's what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And I referenced it in my column the other day, Steve, the Dallas and New Orleans games. The defense didn't do very much. Prescott picked them apart. They didn't stop Ezekiel Elliott. And then you go to New Orleans, no pressure on Breeze. That goes to McCoy. Yay, getting double teamed. Lee, what great player doesn't get double teamed?
That's true. And I'm like you. I'm tired of hearing I'm double teamed all the time. But it's still, after this press conference, Tom Bassinger of the Tampa Bay Times put out on Twitter a 31% of McCoy's sacks have come in the fourth quarter. And as Mr. Isbitz pointed out earlier, before we started recording this, how many teams were throwing on the Bucs in the fourth quarter? They're running the clock out.
Well, I'll say this, just because Lee threw...
Well, Lee, the games are close.
It's like a presidential debate. Lee threw my name out there, so I get 30 seconds to respond.
Yep.
All right, little Marco, what do you got to say?
Oh!
go ahead.
My hands are pretty big. Let me say this.
Little Marco.
Bassinger's data, I give it no credence.
Is that career or last year he's talking
career.
About?
Career. And he broke it down year by year as well.
It was an interesting tweet, but it meant absolutely nothing to me. So I take nothing out of that. McCoy is talking about the sacks he missed, not the ones he got. So his 31% in the fourth quarter, very nice. He's talking about the plays he did not make. So I agree with McCoy. There were plenty of plays he did not make, and I don't know what anybody else's stats are. So for now, until we dive deeper into the data, it's meaningless.
And Lee, you got to admit, the Dallas and New Orleans games in the fourth quarter, the game was on the line.
I always point to the offense being unable to move the ball in the fourth quarter.
I understand.
But yeah. So, real quick about the contrast in McCoy and Jameis. You pointed out Jameis was effervescent. It was like he just won the San Diego game. He was almost ready to break out laughing. He was so happy.
He wants to play game one this afternoon.
Oh, my gosh. The guy was on top of the world. I couldn't believe the energy that was coming from him. And then McCoy, I felt like I was a priest hearing a confessional. I was waiting for McCoy to give the act of contrition. It was like,
He should have been laying on a couch. Freudian analysis.
And you could have heard a pin drop in that place. I thought he was going to start crying. Honest to gosh. It just, the contrast just blew my mind. McCoy was like all but saying, it's my fault they aren't in the playoffs. And James was like, let's go.
That's probably the difference between being a very good player and being a great player. Look, that's what it comes down to.
I'm going to say this, and this is harsh, but it's reality, and you know what? The three of us have been covering the Bucs for a lot of years. People are tuning in for our observations. I've been watching Gerald McCoy since he got into this league.
7 years.
Every season, he comes to the table with a different perspective on who he is, how he fits into the team, and what he's going to do. He's never consistent, ever.
1 year he came in a robe, remember? Like Ramses from the Ten Commandments. Boy, I got
That's
this going over there.
Glass. Yeah, there you Ramses. Go.
This is another night, like 2 nights.
Saturday night, right?
It was. Yeah.
Ramses.
Every year, the guy is trying to reinvent himself.
Lee, is 93 haunted by the ghost of 99? Is that basically what it's come down to? He's not 99 in temperament, in impact, and he never will be.
And
that's not a terrible thing to
exactly.
say.
Exactly. There's no shame in that because you're talking about, as McCoy himself pointed out, only one of five defensive tackles to get in the hall on the first at-bat, Mr. Kaufman. And you were a big part of that. C-O-W, Kaufman.
There you go.
You're right. And maybe he's burdened because that's the standard he has set for himself and he hasn't reached that. Again, no shame in that, but maybe, I guess haunted is a better word. I think you're onto something. I really do. Or is it Irv?
No, it's Ira. Steve, no shame in not being to the level of a two-time all-decade player. It's very rare.
Well, there is shame when you're a player and you consider yourself a top player, which McCoy does. He's not saying he stinks. When you've never been to the playoffs and you're going into your eighth year and you got to be around your peers and the last two guys from teams in the division went to the Super Bowl, yeah, there's shame. There's shame in that. I think McCoy's feeling a little bit of that.
Sue has been to the playoffs a couple of times.
Sure.
And Aaron Donald now has, sort of like the moniker of the best D tackle in football.
Can I add to that what you were saying about McCoy?
Just add.
In the press conference, for those who haven't seen the press conference, McCoy's press conference today, he was, it was like he could see the end coming. He was talking about the end of his career. And I had asked him, how many more years you got left? And his goal is currently fluid. His goal is 13 because why, Ira? That's
99.
He
should be in his prime right now, Steve. His prime.
Now, I don't want to take a crack at Buccaneers media relations here, but I'm sort of going to put the word out there, the thought out there. McCoy, in that news conference today, he said a couple things, and he said, I'm just joking, don't print that. One thing he said that he did not say he was joking about was he said, quote, my knees hurt.
Yes, he did say that.
And nobody from, maybe we'll see by the time this podcast posts on Tuesday morning, maybe from somebody from the Bucks will clarify that McCoy was kidding or he didn't really mean that or that was said flippantly. But I'm going to assume it wasn't right now. And if the guy's 29 years old, entering his eighth year.
And they hurt in April.
And they hurt in April. And it's his eighth year. And he's 29. And he plays defensive tackle where guys don't last long. There's a short window here for the Bucks. I've said 2-year window. McCoy is not going to last forever, guys.
Well, here, to back you up there, last season, I think it was last season, ESPN flew a guy down here. Can't remember who it was. And he was embedded with McCoy for a week. Went to his home, got up at the crack of dawn, followed McCoy when he dropped his kids off to school. In one of those episodes, I know we linked to it on our site, McCoy was talking about, I don't know how much longer I've got. He goes, I could tell the years are building up on me. Pain after a game lingers longer. And it sounded like a guy who was very much thinking about life after football.
You know, that's hand-to-hand combat every snap, Steve, the interior line. Now, one thing we haven't talked about is the potential impact of Chris Baker on McCoy's effectiveness, maybe even his longevity. McCoy's certainly happy to have Chris Baker to the mix. Akeem Spence, God bless him, good guy, but didn't make much of an impact as a Buccaneer. Plugger. Baker might be a little bit more of a factor, Steve, on the pass rush than Akeem Spence. You'd have to think so.
The key point... There we go. Ah, I had a little microphone issue there for a second. You made the key point, Ira, saying that it's April. And when a guy references his knees in April, man, that's just, to me, that's a red flag. It's April.
It was a throwaway line, but you think it was significant, Steve.
I don't throw anything away. Neither does Lee. Neither does Lee. On the D-line, let's transfer over to Jason Light, who did his pre-draft news conference. At the very end, I asked him, and I want your sage Tampa Bay sports wisdom, Ira. I asked Light, you got an older defensive line. Would you like to get younger on the D-line? Usually these GMs don't answer the question in these pre-draft news conferences. He said, yes, I'd like to inject youth on the D-line. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
I think if he said anything else, we'd see right through it, Lee. Mm-hmm. You got Will Golston. He's been around. Ayers is certainly on the backside of his career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve's already talked about McCoy. This will be year 8 for mm-hmm. McCoy. McDonald's a veteran. Baker's been around.
Jack Smith.
Jack Smith. So you've got Noah Spence, mm-hmm. Who's going to be the future bellwether of mm-hmm. this team. And I expect, if anybody's going to crack double-digit sacks in 2017, you would think it would be Noah Spence.
You would think so,
anyone. Steve, obviously, they got to get a little younger in the defensive line, and that's why, and I hate to agree with his, but you know that, Lee. It bothers
it pains
me.
You.
It pains me. But he said months ago, don't be shocked if they take a defensive end at number 19. And I'm coming around a little bit. I will not be shocked.
I would not be shocked either because, gosh darn it, it just drives me. I'm one of these fans that lay awake at night and staring at the ceiling when I start throwing things, scare my neighbors. Still don't have a double-digit sack guy since Rice left. Still, that's beyond disgraceful. Not only would it not shock me, and Light sort of brought this up in his press conference. Outside linebacker, strong side linebacker is technically part-time with the Bucs offense. 40% maybe, because when they go to a nickel and dime package, the first guy off the field is strong side linebacker.
But if you get the right strong side linebacker.
You get the right guy who can also rush the passer, that way he can stay on the field for every play, then you're cooking with gas, so to speak.
And they haven't had that. They have not had that.
Yeah. No, they have not. Not since Rice left. Uh-uh.
And that's very, very hard to find as a 4-3.
Coming off the left side.
Pass rusher. Very difficult.
That's why I think, and I said this on, I hate to bring this up. I know you're rivals with him. Pawlowski. I was on Pawlowski's podcast Monday.
I won't hold that against you.
Bucks Uncensored.
Bucks Uncensored. I said this then. I'm saying it now. There's some breadcrumbs out there that suggest the Bucs are going to be trying to play more 34 fronts than they did last year. Now, all three of us saw last year in underwear football, they practiced a 34 front with Noah Spence as outside linebacker. Chris Baker has experience as a defensive end in a 34 defense. So it would not shock me at all if they get this linebacker we're talking about that could come off the edge as an outside linebacker and then also as in a 43 front can play the strong side.
That's another reason I wanted Calais Campbell. Steve thought he would have been very comfortable in a 3-4 alignment and very effective. So they didn't get him. They got Baker, who, according to my Redskins source, quote, good player, good guy, comma, doesn't like to practice. I'm sure that went over very well at One Buck Place when they read that on Joe Buck's Fan.
Well, you know, Ira, hey, sorry. That was, you got that from a high-level source, and it was legit. And that's the word on Baker. Doesn't mean he won't practice here.
A very high level source.
Lee, I'm not backing off this edge rusher problem. I'm not backing off. Because, again, we go to the Dallas and New Orleans games, and they didn't get the job done. There wasn't enough pressure.
When did they get the job done?
I mean, Prescott was an exceptional rookie, but Lee, 32 out of 36? Mm-hmm. That's ungodly. That can't happen.
There's only one game where they dominated up front, and that was Seattle, which has an atrocious offensive line. And that was one of the games where the McCoy critics actually said, about time, fourth quarter,
and
getting
and
sacks.
The first New Orleans game, that was a heck of a defensive effort.
Yes, yes.
But the consistency was never there.
No.
And it didn't show up when they needed it most. So here we are, talking about an edge rusher again. Like I've said, Ira, it's my recycled old joke. There's a whole generation of Bucks fans who think Simeon Rice is a Thai food dish. That's all they know.
It looks like Jacquees Smith's going to be back as a Buccaneer.
Well, but can you bank on him?
My source said the 49ers have dropped their interest. Again, I have a strong source there. So,
yes, you do.
So it looks like he's going to be a Buck. Are you counting on him, Steve? Are you counting on Jack Smith?
Zero.
Off the left side?
All right, Ira, enough about Jack Smith. Adrian Peterson. Look, Jameis Winston stood up there. And
boy, did you set him up for that question, Isbitz? That was something like, you were like Raymond Burr.
Look, now let's be clear. I didn't set up Jameis. I asked him, Jameis, what was it like training with Adrian Peterson? What'd you learn from the experience?
And you also asked him, would you like to play with Adrian Peterson?
I didn't know that Jameis was going to say that the guy changed his life. That's really what Jameis said. He changed my football life.
Did I
get that wrong?
Greatness. He dropped the word greatness. He was in the presence of greatness. That's the exact word Jameis used, greatness.
So what do you make of this? Jameis is saying that how much he learned from the work ethic.
I make it that he will report such findings to Mr. Light and Mr. Cutter. And in the end, it will have negligible impact, Mr. DeKemper.
Well, didn't Jameis kind of hint, and I'm not just the three of us in this room, but the entire press corps, weren't we trying to needle him into saying, are you banging the desk for Dalvin Cook and Jason Light's office, or Adrian Peterson, or whomever? And he tried to dismiss that. He's like, oh, I got bigger things to do than to worry about, you know, who he drafts, but I think we know better.
I think in crunch time, Jason Light is going to trust his scouts, and yeah, it's nice that Jameis Winston has a great relationship with Cook and they went to the same school. But in the end, Jason Light's a scout at heart.
Yes. Well,
and he loves his scouts. Mm-hmm. He has total trust in them. And if they say that, you know, player X is better than Dalvin Cook, they're going with player X.
By the way, and this may say more about me than anything else, but what I took out of Jason, and nor any GM is going to reveal much, you know, a week before the draft. But what I took out of it, the big thing I took out of it, was when he went after all these mock draft experts. I loved that. I love. What was the line? Our scouts don't get 10 mocks to get things right.
Absolutely. I can think of no greater waste of time, Mr. Isbitz, than a 7-round mock draft. And I hope you guys don't do one on Joe Bucks Fan and make me look stupid, because I'm not doing one.
You already look stupid, Ira. No, I'm kidding. You set yourself
Irv,
up.
That's Irv,
you
Irv
set yourself
you.
Up.
Irv looks stupid. Irv to you. 7-round mock drafts. Stupid.
Yeah, we've never done one. It's not going to happen, and that's that.
I got scolded about that once. A couple weeks ago, some guy sent us on Twitter his 6th-round mock draft, and I'm like, I can't get in the 6th round. Sorry.
Steve, how do you know who's on me? How do you know who's on the board at 213?
Well,
that's crazy.
How do you know who's on the board at 19?
I think it's fine to do a 7-round mock draft, but only if you're going to do the whole league. You can't just sort of pick guys you want. It's stupid.
It's a parody.
It's like picking the candy you want on Halloween. Just go get it. You know, come on. All right, now, a couple of things again. Important for your sage wisdom here. Two things. Short answers, Ira. I asked Jameis, yes. Would you like to play with Adrian Peterson? Jameis easily could have said, well, I love our guys. He's not on our
decision.
Team. He said, yes, I want to play with Adrian Peterson. What do you make of that?
Again, I think it's going to be negligible. But when he said, somebody asked him about DeSean Jackson at the beginning of free agency, I thought that was significant. I thought that. And you know what? I think at that point, he had already had discussions with Jason Light and Dirk Cutter. And you know, ultimately, DeSean Jackson was the fit. Lee, DeSean Jackson fit what Dirk Cutter wanted.
Yes.
Better than anybody else in free agency. We know that. Does Adrian Peterson fit what the Bucs are looking for in terms of age and production and
fit
and fit and, you know, fitting into the room. He does not. So I don't look for Peterson to be a buck.
Speaking of running backs and who you don't expect to see as a buck, you've mentioned this before. You don't expect to see Doug Martin here this fall. Well, I talked about the biggest thing I took away from Light's press conference. Actually, that was the second biggest thing. The biggest thing was someone asked him about Doug Martin, and they was being pressed to say something about Doug Martin.
He said all the right things, Lee.
Well, he said, we'll have to see about the fit. I'm paraphrasing. He used the word fit. Well, that, to me, he's drafting a running back.
He also keeps saying, Steve, we don't have to make that decision yet. That's the stop.
But when that's
not a ringing endorsement.
No, he won't endorse the guy, period.
And how can you? He's going to be gone the first 3 weeks of the season. But the fit, when he said we have to see the fit is, if you don't know he's going to be a fit now, come on. They're bringing in a running back.
And a lot can change in 10 days, Steve. You know that.
I have not heard Jason Light say, maybe I'm wrong, you guys have twice the amount of ears that I do. I have not heard the man say, I want Doug Martin. I hope he's with us when he returns from his suspension.
We welcome him back wholeheartedly.
I haven't heard Jason Light say, I hope he's with us come crunch time next season.
I've got till the end of September to make a decision.
Right.
But when he used the word fit, that to me was like major red flag.
I'm not backing off my stance, Steve. I still don't expect to see Martin in a buck
uniform. Yeah, neither do I.
Steve Martin. Doug Martin.
But I do expect them to draft a running back on the first 2 days of the draft.
Okay, now regarding drafting a running back, going back for your sage wisdom, Ira.
Sage wisdom.
Jameis Winston today, one of his more important lines, I believe, was when he looked at the media and he said, look, I believe Dalvin Cook is a top 15 pick. Yes. We don't have a top 15 pick.
Yes.
So I felt there was a ton of sincerity in Jameis's voice that he believes Cook's a top 15 pick. Maybe he's even hearing that from Cook through his agent. And other people.
So he's not really envisioning Cook and Pewter.
So
that's what you got.
Well, what did you get? Who cares what I got?
I thought that was interesting. It might have been Winston's way of saying, Buck fans, don't expect Cook to be in Pewter. That could be his way of saying that. You know, he's not going to be there at 19, and he may not be there at 19.
Yeah, that's very true. Very real.
We're also hearing that his stock is dropping. I don't know why.
I don't know what to believe. Well, people keep
every
bringing
year
up.
There's a couple of guys in the draft that go through this.
Well,
you know that.
You keep hearing the red flags, but those red flags have been out there for years on Cook, not just recently.
Steve, what'd you think of Light's answer when I asked him about if you're thinking about a player with some character issues, don't you have to run that past ownership? I was obviously thinking about Mixon. I didn't mention him by name. And Light's answer was they want to know what we're thinking about everything. They want to know what we're thinking. They want to know who we're thinking about in the second and third rounds. He didn't really answer that question, Steve. I'm sticking by it. If you're thinking about taking Joe Mixon, you've got to get the sign off from ownership.
I would think so.
Absolutely.
I didn't think much of it. I mean, look, the Glazers are very involved. Coming in here today to One Buck Palace, Brian Glazer was pulling in at the same time. He waved me forward. I didn't want to walk in front of his vehicle, thinking he might run me over in a bizarre accident. So I waved him through. But they're here all the time. And how could they not want to know? I mean, imagine you're the owner. You're not going to go say, hey, Jason, what are we thinking? What are we doing? I think Lightmore was saying, I think the crux of what he said was, they don't tell me what to do, but I tell them everything we're doing because I want to, and I value their feedback.
Didn't he also say he's never been ordered to take a player or not to take a player?
Yes, he did. I believe he did say that. Yes, he did.
Yeah, he said they never tell me which. I've never been told what to do. Yeah,
they want to be in the loop. They absolutely want to be in the loop.
I think, and you know the Glazers better than I do, and as you do too. Yes, but you suck cocktails with them. I'm glad you finished off that phrase
over there.
Yeah, I wasn't going Howard Stern here.
This is not the commission's
Uncensored. No,
half second of fear there for a second.
But continue. But I get the impression the Glazers just want to know the philosophy about why Light and other people are doing certain things. They just want to know where they're coming from. They want to get the background. Why are you making that decision? Go ahead and make the decision. We want to know why.
And the Glazers are already on record, Steve, because of your trusted columnist asking the right question, that they quote, we judge general managers by their drafts. And on that basis, Jason Light's in good stead with the Glazer family right now. Why wouldn't he be, Lee?
Well, you're setting him up. You're teeing up his bits here. Oh,
no tee up. They're 9-7, and how could Light not be in good place right now?
What's his contract, Steve?
Well, who knows what the negotiations are? He doesn't have one for next
year.
But
I'm saying strictly by his three drafts, he's got to be in good stead.
Yeah, he gets an A, at least an A- on the overall picture of the drafts, at least an A- on free agency. Well, You know, it's more like a C minus, and I might be being generous there. He's not a bad GM, and he should be in good stead right now. And I don't think he's going to do anything crazy in this draft. I've said before, I think he takes the safe route and light himself today. Use the word. There are a lot of safe players in this draft. Mm. Use the word safe.
Which is what you've been saying.
Which is what I've been saying all along.
And you're saying barring a 6-10 lapse, Light should be working at $1 place for this.
I'm not saying anything.
You're not saying anything. You're the host of this podcast.
It's your podcast.
We got a host who's not saying anything.
I'm not going to sit here and talk about Light's status at the end of the season. Who cares now?
If Winston blows an ankle and they're 6-10, Light's not. I wouldn't think Light is in danger.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Look, if this team loses next year, everybody's in trouble.
If they're healthy.
Yeah, barring something weird, this should not be a losing team. There's a problem if this team goes 6-10. There are serious problems that the Glazers, the G's, as Lee calls them, will have to figure out where those problems are.
What'd you take away from the potential impact of DeSean Jackson on this ball club? Even Gerald McCoy weighed in, and certainly Jameis weighed in. Impact player, without question, Steve?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Jameis can't believe it. He's in heaven.
The guy that he mentioned at the start of free agency, right? I mean, that's the guy.
They just got him a superstar wide receiver to put next to another star. I mean, he can't believe it. That was his whole mantra.
And DeKemper says they should draft the receiver number in the first round again.
Well, I don't know about first round, but the first 2 days, whether it be Godwin, Chris Godwin of Penn State. I watched that Rose Bowl game. I finally got around to it because I like Penn State, and I finally got around to it yesterday.
Corey Davis.
That's a receiver, but I don't want to spill any beans at what I've been told.
So Ross.
I haven't heard anything about Ross and the Bucs at all. And the thing about Ross is he scares me to death because the guy's so brittle. I mean, speed galore. He's the next to DeSean Jackson. They're both friends, as you know. But that guy scares me. I mean, he blew a wheel running a 40-yard dash on top of his knee injuries, on top of his shoulder injuries. Good grief. This guy's an ambulance on 2 feet.
All right, I got a question for you. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I have to bring it. I've been waiting for days to bring this to the podcast, Ira, and to you, Lee, both of you. Now, I took a big beating last year from all angles, saying that Roddy White should be explored by this team, checked out by this team, brought in, signed by this team, cut him if he doesn't work out. Now, you guys had your sources, good sources, telling you, Roddy White, we got no interest in that guy.
Ultimately, DeKemper and I triumphed. We won the battle.
Maybe you didn't read the story, Ira, on JoeBucksFan.com, but Roddy White spoke out in a podcast, very relaxed. He did an hour with this guy from the Journal-Constitution, a columnist up there, and he detailed, great detail, how he talked to Dirk Cutter and Mike Smith and how Cutter talked to him about how many snap counts he would get in a Bucks uniform. He explained that they talked to him about a job. In detail. What do you make of that?
And so why didn't it happen?
What do you make of that?
You saying White implied that it was White's decision not to come to the Bucks? I'm not buying it.
Yes, White actually said that they had they had V-Jax, they had Mike Evans. He just wasn't interested. He said he had a deal, an offer from the Titans. Jason Light's guy. He had a deal on the table.
Mr. Robinson.
And he turned it down because he just didn't think that any chance that they would be a winning team. And he detailed the whole thing. What's your take?
All right, here's my point. Just like the Adrian Peterson situation, Lee, when the numbers change, the interest might change. And maybe that was the case with Roddy White. He wasn't going to be the number one guy in Tampa. It was going to be Mike Evans. Everybody knew that, including Roddy White. Mm-hmm. He was going to have limited snaps, and maybe he was asking for too much money. But at the money he was asking, at that point, the Bucks were not interested. And it turned out I was right. Isbitz was wrong. That's the bottom line.
Well, and Steve will like my comeback here. It's not really a comeback, but I remember I got a text from someone important in this building about Roddy White. And he said, you obviously haven't seen film of him last year. And my reply was, no, but I've seen Josh Reedy on the field.
Bernard Reedy.
Yeah. Bernard Reedy. I was told in training camp it wasn't going to happen, and it didn't happen.
Right. My point, though, but the broader point is, I believe both of you got the impression that there was never going to be any interest in Roddy White, and now Roddy White's out saying there was a hell of a lot of interest, and they talked to me. So,
do we believe everything Roddy White says?
Do we believe everything your sources tell you?
Well, here, have the Bucks come back and refuted what White said? No.
No,
they have not.
It wasn't going to happen, Steve. It just wasn't going to happen.
I know it wasn't going to happen. It's interesting, though.
It is. And I think we're going to see the same thing with Adrian Peterson. A lot of smoke and no fire.
I don't know how much smoke there is. Honest, to be honest, you know, I've talked to some of the same people.
They're moving on with a draft pick running back.
I will just say this about Adrian Peterson. At best, there's a 15% chance. You know, if Jameis coerces light into it, if Peterson comes down on his price, there's, you know, Cutter obviously seemed, you know, Steve's got to ask Cutter about AP, and Cutter got all giddy, like an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, Ira was here. Cutter's like, well, I can't wait to hear what Jameis has to say.
So if Cutter and Jameis were beating a drum to light and the price was right, it's possible, but it's limited. Like I said, 15% at best.
All right, Ira, closing thought. I'm going to throw it to you for your closing thought on the overall from Jason Light. Pre-draft news conference, you've watched probably 73 of these in your career. What did you feel from the GM as far as what's coming next and where his mindset is?
My impression is, Lee, that Buck fans that are expecting a dynamic move up the board from 19 to 13, I think it's highly unlikely in this particular draft.
You don't think he could be throwing smoke, speaking of smoke?
No, I think there's a chance he moves back a little bit and still gets the guy he wants. He's got that much faith in his scouts. His Buck intel in the draft has been very good. It's been very good over
with the exception
years.
Of one. That was a Jason Light move.
But Jason's got his tentacles out there. He knows a lot of people in this league. And he's worked for
tentacles.
A lot of teams. And
he's suggesting he's a squid?
I find his intel's been pretty accurate, Steve. He has a pretty good idea of where players are going to land on that board in that first round. It's a deep draft. I think that's true. I don't think it's a great draft. I think it's a deep draft. And it's not a great draft because there's not great quarterbacks. Quarterbacks make a draft.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's
and
a good point.
So don't expect a big move up from the Bucs in the first round. If anything, they'd move back before they'd move up.
All right, Kaufman, you nailed it. As always, we'll see you Thursday. And on Thursday, we'll be 1 week from the draft and your appearance out in public that everybody knows about, which we'll hear about more. And
I'm thinking about a bodyguard that night, Steve. I'm thinking there's some guy coming from Costa Rica. I'm a little concerned about him.
You might need it.